Get In Lifted Season 3 is finally here, and we're celebrating with a giveaway for you, our listeners, where all of you win. You just press play, so I know your podcast app is still open. Before you put your phone back in your pocket, will you please take a minute to write an honest rating and review of the show? Take a screenshot. Email it to me, Kimberly at inlifted.me, before May 1st, and I'll reply with an exclusive invite to a live In Lifted Coaches Workshop hosted by Mark England and myself. P.S. If you're putting your phone back in your pocket, please use an EMF blocking device, just saying. Get control of your words. Get control of your story. Get control of your breath. Get over your fear of not being good enough. Get your dream clients, get them results, and get In Lifted. All right, guys, welcome to Get In Lifted. I have a guest with me today that was introduced to me by one of the In Lifted coaches. Tommy Allen introduced me to Martin McPhillamy, who is the founder of Performance Through Health and is talking with us all today about going a little bit deeper on breath. So Martin, thanks for joining us. Tommy, thanks for connecting us. To kick this off and get started, Martin, I would love to hear from you why breath is so essential to your health. Big question to open it up with.
Yeah, great question to start. And I think I'd like to actually go back to, you know, the ancient traditions of how the Greeks called this word of pneuma, and pneuma being, you know, the concept of spirit, and that really knocking on to almost every ancient tradition, that being a word around breath and spirit, and, you know, obviously inspiring, and that concept really. And I really enjoy the science, but also understand the spiritual side, or you could say the internal side of what their breath allows us to achieve. And through the science, I'm looking deeper and deeper and deeper. We're actually understanding how it is the essence of forming emotion. It's the essence of forming our cognitive processes. It's the essence of keeping our nervous system kind of in balance and regulated, which is the interaction between our internal and external environment. Our breath rate generally does alter our arousal state, so how elevated we feel or how slow we feel. And I think really that encompasses what we could say scientifically to a certain extent, even personality is shifted through our breath. And that for me just demonstrates the importance of it, just on the level of that, let alone the level of cellular activity and energy production, mitochondria, and all those, you know, terms that we could go deep into, as well as mental health states. So the breath really is the center of the mind-body connection. And I think that's why it is so vital for our health and for just our well-being in general.
You guys see why this is a perfect conversation to be having? It's like what you articulated right there is like so exactly what I was hoping you would say, or what I knew you would say, and was why I wanted to frame the conversation like that. Because the work that we do within Lifted, we're working on mindset and helping people tell a better story, right? And so the breath, most people don't think about, well, some people are starting to think about how breath is aligning with mindset work. I know you are working on this and teaching this. There's some other, you know, breathwork facilitators are becoming much more popular, but at its core, the breath being the spirit, right? Like our soul's essence, our, like what's connecting us to even what's going on here, being alive, is something that, of course, that's an important conversation, but it's so easy to see how people will automatically run too far into the science and then forget about what it is that this is quite literally breathing life into us. And so much around the connection of the mind and body and telling a different story, how people can see and interact with themselves different, the different physiological states that happen from breathing is all components of what we teach, but we don't go into the depth on the science side. So I'm really excited to have this conversation with you to bridge those two things, because we recognize that we're having a conversation that goes beyond the science side of it, that there's also a spirit side of it. And then there's that idea of like how we're actually changing the way we see and view ourselves out in the world. And so I would love for you to give us just a little bit of your background and how you started working in breath and facilitating this, because I know you have an interesting story around that that our listeners will love to hear. And then, yeah, just share with us how you ended up being the guy to teach all of this.
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to 2008, 2009, around that period where I was at university studying exercise physiology. And I just happened to have two professors that were respiratory physiologists. And in one lab session, we were looking at how strong is the diaphragm and the inspiratory muscles. And when I pulled on a device that basically registered the strength of my diaphragm, it was almost double of what it should have been to the average male. So it kind of made me curious as to why. A score like that was like, oh yes, I'm very good at this. So let's dig a little bit deeper. The professors pulled me into the lab to do some more additional tests, and I pretty much kind of like smashed all these breathing tests, and that got me hooked straight away, because then I was like, well, this is obviously something I'm very good at. So how about let's just dive into it a little bit deeper? So I ended up doing a master's degree in exercise physiology, but specifically looking at respiratory muscles to see whether we can improve respiratory muscles for exercise performance. And after that, it led to a 10-year career as a respiratory and sleep scientist. I moved from the UK, where I was training, to Australia in 2016, went from working in very large public hospitals with a lot of funding to a very small clinic in Perth, Western Australia, where most of the world doesn't ever visit. So it was a big shift career-wise. And that, for me, I could say at the point was a great life decision, but a poor career decision. So I lost track of myself a little bit during that period. I was around about 27 years old, and I reached a goal of moving to Australia, which was a goal I'd had since I was 15 years old. And then I didn't have any other goal in my life, and I had really nothing moving me forward. So I ended up just drinking, partying, like a single 27-year-old guy on the other side of the world with no responsibility would. But I drifted so far from my values that I started to show signs of anxiety, insomnia, depression, and I come out in a rash of neck to toe in psoriasis. And that was a warning sign for me, if I'm honest. It was a warning sign that my health was taking a toll, and that I remember I also had injuries with my hips at the time. And I started getting into yoga. A friend said, hey, look, how about you try yoga to try and help your hips? Like you've got injuries, you need more ability. And then through doing yoga, I noticed that how poor I was at being able to stay still in a movement and then try to add some slow breathing on top of it. And why was it that I was so challenged? Number one, the pain of the hips, but number two, because I was anxious and I was unable to stay with my emotions and internally go inside and be confident, I guess, with who I truly was, or who I was truly acting like I was, because I'd become drifted. So that was my then gateway into breath work. Then it became kind of this, oh, okay, there's an internal world. I was very extroverted. There's this very amazing internal world that I can kind of start to look at. And that took me on a real deep journey of spirituality. I also dabbled into a little bit of psychedelics, and that kind of changed my mindset and opened me up a lot to shifting a lot of my belief systems. And that led into deeper connections to spirituality. And from there, I'd realized that I'd made a mistake and left all my family and friends behind in the UK without really thinking about the ramifications of that being on my own in Australia. So I decided that I needed to start an online business so I could travel, so I could see my family whenever I wanted. Because I thought, if I only see them twice a year, that's probably 10 times that I might see my parents again. And that was a bit of an issue.
Yeah, relatable.
So performance through health came to me really because I was seeing over and over and over again in my clinics, people who were non-obese, lean, who were looking like they were fit and healthy, but were having things like sleep apnea, burnout, and just struggling. They were coming with breathing issues and sleep issues, but the core problem was stress. And essentially doctors were like, all your results are normal, go back to your GP. And I felt as if there was something I could help with. And that was helping people understand the concept of breathing, breath work, nervous system, stress, and sleep. That was the core essence of performance through health.
Yeah, your story is awesome to hear and very similar in a sense to my own story and to getting into coaching, and that the path of, being unhealthy yourself, then you go down the path of trying to fix your issues. You figure out that there's a whole internal world that needs to be explored and addressed. There's all these feelings and emotions. Oh shit. Then you discover psychedelics and everything changes. And And the path becomes like totally like I got to a place and how you got to a place where it was like, okay, I'm going to teach this because people are in desperate need of it. And I'm curious for you, like when you switched coming out of clinical care into your own private practice that's no longer like under a hospital system or the healthcare system, what like what were the deciding factors for you to do that? You know, or were there, was it purely just to have freedom in creating your online business, or was there other aspects that you felt?
No, it was the medical system being too rigid. So I remember presenting in front of a group of cardiologists how I'd taken someone from stage 2 hypertension, so blood pressure 140 over 110 to 120 over 170, near textbook blood pressure by just 8 weeks of changing their breathing, doing exercise with nasal breathing, deep rest protocols, and improving their sleep. And I presented that like as a scientific, I guess, presentation. And it was received with a bit of a pat on the back to say, well done, rather than going, well, hey, like I was like, what about referrals? What about setting up a referral pathway so we can get some of your clients who might not need medication, on the verge of it, who can come through? And they were like, well, for insurance reasons, we can't really do that. And for this and for that. And there was just barriers around the things that I was learning and practicing and, you know, going deep into. There was barriers to be able to apply that in a medical situation, in a medical field.
Yeah.
So that was where I thought I really need to be able to move away from this and start my own thing. But then the main thing that actually allowed, I guess, me to have the confidence to do it was the pandemic.
Yeah.
Was the pandemic caused so much stress and anxiety and sleep problems and breathing issues because of COVID.
Absolutely.
That my social media all of a sudden was just getting, you know, more and more views, more people reach out, schools are reaching out saying, can you do large online sessions for us? And before I knew it, I said, well, I can quit this and really take the opportunity to take a risk and go all in. So I did. And I traveled the world during COVID with my wife.
Yeah.
And built the business online.
Yeah. It's so interesting how much like I'm starting to see this in hindsight, how the pandemic over the period of time really created this opportunity for health and wellness practitioners who are teaching real health and wellness and real ability to transform the lives of people who are getting sick or people who are potentially at risk of getting sick from their lifestyle habits and behaviors, and teach what actually works and teach what is easily implementable and what is at its core, in an essence, like a lot of what we're talking about here is free, right? Like if learning how to breathe, yeah, okay, fine. I've got to pay the person to teach me how to do it, but then I just implement and practice. And, you know, fitness, same thing. I might pay for a gym membership, but I'm going to show up and I'm going to do the thing, right? Go for walks. And so much of what I'm seeing now in the growth of the coaching industry, I look back at the pandemic and I think, thank you, right? Because it gave people this opportunity to showcase. It put enough stress on the general population of people who are largely unhealthy to see that there was an opportunity for them to get healthier. And then there was the opportunity for the coaches and practitioners who realized where the centralized systems were failing and said, hey, I have a better option and it's easier to implement. Mm-hmm. And then by the way, I also, as the coach and the teacher, get to go live a more free life and I get to go enjoy more and I'm not limited by the scope of the system. And that is, I'm sure, very relatable to a lot of people listening and just in general, right? Like it was a massive wake up call for so many people. Mm. And for some of us, that wake up call happened well before the pandemic, but it also, you know, through our own practices and journeys, but now a lot of these things are much more mainstream. Like the conversation of breath work is no longer limited to yogis. This is something people are doing. You know, I mean, it's hard pressed to find somebody who calls themselves like interested in health and wellness or somebody who's healthy that hasn't heard of or practiced breath work, right? It's become much more mainstream. So I'd be curious to hear from you, like what big transformations have you seen from people that have decided to take this path with you rather than staying in the traditional healthcare system or supporting your clients through it, but then also how that led you to teaching and certifying other coaches in your method so that they could make that impact too?
I guess the biggest statement I can say of how confident I was in the impact it was having, there was a point where I guess a business decision that I made was to put a money back guarantee on my coaching. That if I can reduce person's stress by 50% in 8 weeks' time, the person could have their money back. And I didn't have to give anyone their money back. And that was 50 clients in a year.
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah. So, you know, after about 10 people, measuring perceived stress, measuring heart rate variability, measuring, you know, all the measures that I would measure of an individual according to the specific needs, I just kept seeing the number was greater than 50% every time. And I was like, let's think about, okay, that's a number, but what impact does that have on people? That's the difference between someone being able to go to work, feeling grounded and confident, being able to have a conversation in a leadership role and actually speak up and have their voice heard, because they've got now the ability to regulate themselves. Therefore, the next step is them getting into a more senior position in a few months' time, because they wanted to do that but didn't have the confidence to do it because they felt anxious about it. It's the difference between someone who is stuck at home because they have so much anxiety to being able to call up an old friend and say, hey, look, I'd love to go to the beach today and go out and catch up with you. But they've been stuck because they've had such riddle with anxiety. Or it's the difference between an athlete actually being able to get to sleep and recovering and feeling good about their game and, you know, recovering from their, not they're reducing the risk of injury, getting over their injuries, getting back into the game and getting back into feeling like they're performing again. Yeah. So that is like the transformation it has on people's lives. So I can measure the science, I can measure the numbers, but the impacts that I was actually seeing was so valuable to the other individual. It made me feel like I had such a purpose in life, which I started to lack in my clinical career because of burnout myself.
Yeah. Yeah. Really key point is like being able to help people and transform that, right? Like that, what that does for them, but also what it does for you as a practitioner.
Like I kept moving forward with that. It was, there was a point where it was, you know, I was recording some of the sessions and I was getting consent to ask whether people would give a bit of talk about their experience of how they've gone to try and help obviously my business, but also help the world see the impact that this can have. And these videos were going out. I was making scientific case studies and put them on my website. And eventually the likes of, I think you've had Brian McKenzie on here before, you know, him, other people like Dave Wood, Patrick McCurran from the Oxygen Advantage, they were all starting to pay a little bit of attention to like, oh, there's a guy here who's quite knowledgeable in the science. And I started to form a bit of a relationship with Brian, and that started to, you could say, he inspired me to look into some avenues that I maybe hadn't looked into. And I started to try and see if I could support his work or see his, what, you know, where his work was going with scientific literature. We started to do a bit to work together, but before, just before that, I had Wim Hof coaches, Oxygen Advantage instructors, I had breathwork facilitators all reaching out to me saying, do you do a mentorship? Do you teach people the science, like the deeper science? Because we really want to understand what's actually happening, not just in the mind, but in the body, but also in the mind. And it seems like you have this very unique package. So it came out of nowhere, this concept of three or four people just asking me in the space of a week, initially saying no, then going, this seems like maybe there's too many people saying it's like, a, you know, it's the pathway.
Yeah.
It's a message.
Yeah.
And so eventually I said yes and said yes to the other four people and said, book in every 2 weeks and I'll have a 90 minute lecture ready for you. And then this is the curriculum. Here's 12 modules. And before I knew it, 6 months later, I'd built a breath science certification. I'd built a whole 6 month training package with 12 scientific, deep scientific lectures, assisted videos, practical videos, case studies, et cetera, et cetera. I got it accredited here and I got it accredited in the UK, got it, you know, accredited for continual professional development points. And my business coach at the time said, give yourself a goal of how many people you'd like to get through this in 2023. And I said, 10 would be amazing. And I got 60.
Hell yeah.
And I was just like, there was just a growing demand for it. So I just shifted my, I guess, my mindset to still taking on clients, but trying to help other coaches to understand these skills and apply them in our own business and help people in a different way. Because I do believe we need more people in this period to help people, coach people in the yin area versus the yang area.
Yes. Yes, completely agree. Yeah. So, I mean, again, it's many parallels to what we're doing within Lifted is, and my own personal story within it is, you know, I got to this stage where I realized I could only help so many clients on my own. And then I realized if I train and lead other professionals to do and replicate what I'm doing or to teach them and develop them and help them be able to, that's how I can scale my impact. And it was like a selfish decision, but it was also an obvious decision because exactly that we do need people in the world teaching these tools and these methods because they work. And it's simpler and easier than going to go get a prescribed medications or like continuing to struggle throughout your life when we can take us back to our basic understanding of how our physiology works, how our psyche works, and how we can create and enact different change to see different results and ultimately enjoy our lives more, right? Because exactly as you described with your clients and, you know, it's like the impact it has on their lives, they're happier and they're healthier, right? And isn't that what everybody wants, right? Is that like out in the world, that's what they want. We want to feel fulfilled. We want to feel vibrant and alive. We want to feel like we have good relationships and we're making an impact and a difference. And, you know, it is, to me, it's like, that's, it's simple and obvious, but it's also like a lot of our systems don't actually set us up to achieve or experience that. And so when it comes down to, you know, like how, you know, there's a lot more people just like us listening to this show. There's a lot more people just like us that have yet to find this show that are out there doing something similar. And so it's like, I think it's one of my personal missions is like banding together and saying, hey, this is all like valuable and great and like keep going because we're making an impact, we're making a difference. And so much of that, you know, exactly like getting into that idea of that this is more yin than yang, right? I would love for you to expand on that a little bit about what that really means to you and why that's an important facet of this health journey, personal development journey. Like, tell us a little bit more about what that looks like within your work and scope.
In essence, one thing I want to touch on there is when I started Performance Through Health, I was really looking at what is the vision that I wanted to achieve, the impact that I wanted to have on the world. And it was to see a world of healthy and happy people living meaningful and connected lives. That was like those four things: health, happiness, meaning, and being connected to other people, but connected to self. And you could say, well, the yin on a level of energy is like, you know, you've got your yang, which is, you know, going hard or you're pushing yourself. And the yin is the more slow and slowing down and regulating yourself and being able to get deeper sleep. And that is, I guess you could say, on the energy level. But the other concept of the, the more philosophical side is the chaos and order. And what is that? If we break down chaos is being caught up in the concept of entropy and that both physiologically entropy, hormones all over the place, muscle breaking down, not sleeping well. That then has a psychological impact on what's psychological entropy? That's uncertainty. That's anxiety. So by helping people create structure in their habits, structure in their life via starting with a breath practice, then building areas, what we can do is we can shift people's physical health. And if we can shift people's physical health, maybe they feel a little bit more confident with some energy. Maybe they feel a bit like more self-aware and they can start to dig into their mindset from a position of exploration versus kind of being rigid in their thoughts, because we know that stress will alter someone at the level of the personality. It makes people more disagreeable, makes people less open to experience. And it makes people either more conscientious for control or less conscientious, and their life goes into chaotic times. So if we get people more grounded, they're more, they can explore themselves and their emotions from a position of, I guess you could say, creativity.
Yeah.
Now, if we have someone in a good mindset, we can start to build their network and their peers, and then they help become a leader. Now, I found through that process, my personal self, that helped me go from a chaotic life to an ordered life. So moving from the yin to the yang, the feminine to the masculine, the chaos to the order, and through that, that's where you find meaning.
Yeah, I love that explanation. And I would love for you to, just for like a second here, to get us into the science a little bit more around what happens when, so I'm going to frame this with something that we teach, and this is where I would love for you to jump in and explain to us on a deeper science level for our science nerds out there, is like, ultimately, we talk a lot about when our clients are in an upregulated state. And as a coach, you're coming in, you're trying to help them shift a belief or a thought or a story or a view of themselves. And we effectively talk about breathing being high and tight, right? So it's chest breathing, people, and they're in that chaos, right? And then we describe, again, super layman's terms, but it's like, it's effective and it works, right? Is like, help them get their breathing low and slow. And you as a coach need to get your breathing low and slow so that they can co-regulate with you. Describe to us a little bit about what's happening in that stress response when someone is breathing up in their chest and why mm-hmm. their listening faculties go down, why their decision-making faculties go down, and why they are unable to hear you as the coach. Like, describe us through what's yeah. happening there physiologically, because we talk about that at a broad stroke, because we know that it's happening and we can observe it, and we train our students to observe it, and we don't go that deep on what's actually happening. So I'd love for you to fill in some of that for people that are listening and familiar with our method, that then can back up with the science aspect of what's going on and the physiological response mm-hmm. that's going on, so that they're like, ah, connect all the dots.
Sure. Okay. So there's different areas I can go down, but I'm going to start with the mechanics of the breathing, because it's this, when we get a shift in our breathing mechanics, say there is a repeat in stresses occurring externally or maybe internally because of anxiety and rumination, that instantly is going to increase our respiratory rate, how fast we're breathing. So when we increase our respiratory rate, people might start to breathe through their mouth more. But also there is a shift in the inspiratory and expiratory portions of our breath cycle, focusing more on inspiration because the inspiration is more sympathetic. So people generally might start to breathe a bit, stacking breaths on top of each other, the term is slightly, which can shift the behavior of where someone's breathing. They start breathing into their chest, which is mechanically inefficient. It's why we also have a very shallow, fast breath. So that wastes a lot of energy, which then causes people to feel even more stressed. If that continues to happen, we actually, because of the direct relationship that the breath has with the nervous system, actually it's bi-directional. It's both ways. There is a direct link there. We will potentially have a shift in the amount of sympathetic nervous activity that is occurring. And that becomes then a, what we'd call an allostatic load shift, where it becomes stuck. So the person then is in what we call sympathetic overdrive, too much stress, because what the nervous system's trying to do, it's always trying to make predictions of what's going to happen next to ensure it can conserve its energy. So if stress keeps happening outside or inside, we get that shift. Now we're all of a sudden, we've got reduction in our vagal activity, reduction in parasympathetic, increased sympathetic. What that does is it will essentially update the model of your brain, because our brain is modeled by learning. And what this nervous system is doing is always learning from our environment. So if it thinks that stress is going to continue to come to do, the brain can either do two things. It reacts to a sensation. It can create a different action and try and find a way to bring down that stress, or it can update the model of the world. And when it updates its model of the world, what it does is it actually makes the person, like I just said, they will be less agreeable, i.e. they'll lose empathy. They will be either more conscientious and get stuck in the way they do things and just do, this is my way, this is how I do it. And they are less open to experience. So they are less creative and can't explore new belief systems. Why? Because if you do that, it's now become a threat, because it creates uncertainty again. And the brain is trying to create certainty all the time. It's trying to create order. Humans are just species that are trying to turn the unknown into the known, trying to turn the chaos into the order. We're information processing machines. That's essentially what we are. And if it's information that's novel, that is a threat to the system. Therefore, if a coach is trying to help an individual try to change something that is new to a person that's stuck in this position, you've all of a sudden generated a threat. So they get tunnel vision into their ideas, and it's very hard to shift. So what does the breath allow us to do? Go back to the very first point of allowing to bring that nervous system back into a state of exploration and safety. So we can start to explore new beliefs, new ideas from a position of, that makes sense, versus, no, I can't do that. Or, no, this is the way I do it.
Yeah. So good. So good. Can you speak a little bit to how, when we're two people and our nervous systems are interacting, right? In that.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Scenario.
Yeah, yeah. The co-regulation, yeah. When you are born and as a baby, as you know, a newborn baby doesn't know how to regulate itself. The newborn baby can make noise to get attention. It can feel a sensation, but doesn't really know what that sensation is. And it can swallow and breathe. All of these functions are functions of what we call the vagus nerve. What the role of the vagus nerve is really doing is sending information from our internal to our brain, but also it's responding to the environment outside of us. And this is Stephen Porges' work on polyvagal theory, that the element of having a safe nervous system or safe feeling is the highest form of that is social connection, being connected to someone else. So a mother comes along to a baby, or a father comes along to a baby, a primary caregiver comes along and really shows that young baby love, care, connection, and that raises a baby to feel confident, grounded, and safe. So if we as coaches can kind of emulate or replicate someone who is safe, grounded, by shifting their own breathing, not only does that vagus nerve pick it up because of our body language, our demeanor, our vocal tonality, our facial expressions, but also these things called mirror neurons. We have neurons in our brain which are hardwired to mimic people that either we want to be like or we see as safe and valuable, because it allows us to be a part of a tribe. And that's great for evolution. So if we have someone who is breathing at a particular pace and we can actually just pop our hand on them and just tell them that we're okay and slow our own breathing down, yeah, and tell them to take a deep breath, and just, they will mirror that. They will mirror the behavior. And if they mirror the behavior, you've always, all of a sudden, you've helped an individual regulate themselves. That is to co-regulation. And it starts, it can start with simply as breathing. Now, this is taught in like neuro-linguistic programming. It's taught in hypnosis. I remember when I studied communication skills, to observe people's breathing, breathe at their rate, and then slow your breathing down gradually. Once you realize that you've got the person kind of in what you'd call pacing and leading, where you've got that person kind of starting to mimic some of your behaviors, you can then start to shift some of your behaviors, i.e. your breathing, and then would help slow them down and ground them, or change your body language. If you change your body language, does that person change their body language? It's very, very fascinating. I also learned that on a psychedelic trip once as well.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everything that you just shared is, I'm like elated right now with how you've described this, because it's so synergistic with how we teach, and in a way that gives another frame of reference for coaches and practitioners of understanding the importance of the breath in just a regular conversation, you know, with our clients. Because I think speaking to primarily like health coaches and fitness coaches and people that are working in the space, like your clients are coming into your sessions upregulated, right? Your clients are stressed, especially they're walking into the gym and they're, you know, 1 second before class starts and they're running into the, and everything is the chaos that you spoke of. Mm. And so much of the reason why they've been unable to change is because you haven't been able to create order for them in a way that they're actually receptive to. You think you're creating order by giving them the program and telling them what they have to do and here's the protocol and all of that. That isn't creating order for them, and that's not opening them up to new beliefs. So through this more complete picture of understanding what the interactions are between the client and the coach, when you work with the coaches and practitioners that you are training and teaching, how much of how much of these types of skills are you really helping them develop? Like, I'm curious to know, because I think so much of us come to this profession with an idea of needing to know all of the science behind how things work, needing to know like how to almost like prescribe to our clients what's going to help them fix and change, when really it's like the softer skills around coaching or the more complete understanding of how to get them to shift and change their thoughts and behaviors or their mindset to be able to implement what you're going to teach. So how do you look at that in this context of like, is teaching specifically with breath, is this a part of what you teach, or how do you see that coming up?
I think the way that I do teach the program is that there are particular cues or behaviors to look out for in your clients. And this is basically going to show up is essentially, is the person, is the person safe? Do they feel safe within themselves? If they don't, how do we identify that? And then what can we understand about the science of how we can observe that? And then what tools do we have to ensure that that comes into place? So for me, it's like, well, sleep and grounding are the two areas that I need to have an individual in first. In essence, what we're trying to do is we're trying to ground someone. How do we do that? We do that through presence. We do that through connection. And we do that through trust and empathy as a soft skill. But then, yeah, we've got this nervous system safety, and we've got the next bit is safety and connection. Are they connected to themselves, and are they connected to know, others. And we can observe that again through the conversations that we're having with people. Are they able to stay with present with the conversation? What are their behaviors like? Are they avoiding particular things? So these are small nuanced things that I teach as we go along. And what this allows us to do is it allows us to, I guess, structure the coaching program in a particular way where we can either, if the person is grounded, they're safe, they're present, they're connected, we can probably jump a few steps and take them into some more of the challenging things. Yeah, we can go straight into kind of resilience sort of things, like really strong ice baths. We can go into hard work. We can go into performance aspects. But if not, then we're actually going to push someone further into a red zone of a distress and stressor and further into the chaos. I try to help people identify scientifically, but through behavioral patterns, how to observe that in individuals and therefore how to kind of meander your way through the coaching structure or coaching the program in that particular way.
Yeah. Yeah. I really like how you mentioned that being able to establish those basic fundamental, like, are they grounded? Are they safe principles? Because if they're not, you will push them further into the exact place you want to take them out of. And that's a part that I think we really can, depending on your years of experience in coaching, can easily overlook because you're so quick to want to get to the thing, right? To teach them the thing. And I remember, you know, in the very beginning days of even in my own fitness journey, like watching and observing how if you're coming into a workout and you're already stressed and you're not present, like that's not helping. That's putting you further into the red, right? And it's like, I would love for you to speak on this a little bit too, from a perspective of like how you've experienced it or how maybe some of the practitioners you work with are experiencing it, but thinking that I'm not doing enough if I'm not doing the things for them, right? Versus like realizing, understanding like the baseline is to get them to that neutral place. And that is more than enough. It's the appropriate thing to do versus, you know, this like softer stuff in the beginning, it's like, I'm not really helping them achieve what they want. Like there's a story that goes on that as if the work isn't hard or it's not the tough, challenging thing, or if we're not going right to the tools and techniques that it's not working or it's not enough. And like how, and again, I think if this comes with years of experience and whatnot, but even if it's for a newer coach, help them understand that that's the baseline. Like we have to start versus thinking that it's not enough or it's not the right approach or the client isn't going to think it's working, that kind of story that may pop up.
Yeah. I think one thing we can get caught in when we're either new to something or we've just learned something is putting methodology and approach over things like you said, appropriateness and specificity. For me, I'm always trying to educate people, like, right, have an understanding of why first. Why are you applying this to this individual? And it's an individual. Because if we're just applying the same things to every single person and hoping to get the same results with every single person, we've got to understand that people are in a different position in their life. To give you an example, breath coaches like to use things like breath holds. Yeah, walking apneas. However, walking apneas are stressful. Now, there's two things that can happen when you're doing a walking apnea in an individual who's stressed. Well, number one, they might be a person who's not very connected to sensations in their body because they're dissociated for multiple reasons. Either they don't feel safe or they're the individual who just is a performance person, just will just ignore sensation just to get a goal. So if you apply a breath hold to a person who's very stressed, who ignores sensations but wants to meet a goal, they will do that regardless of how challenging it is, they'll get there. Is that a positive? Might be for achieving a walking apnea, but for building what we're trying to achieve with resilience, going from stress to calm, no, we're just pushing them further and further beyond their torrents of stress. But that person has so much willpower, they can do it. On the other end, you might have someone who is disconnected because they don't feel safe, and therefore they don't learn about understanding the own sensation is what we're trying to achieve. We're trying to achieve a relationship to negative sensations, but that person just turns a blind eye because they don't want to feel it, and then therefore they keep pushing themselves that way and they're not learning. So it's like looking at that as an approach and going, okay, can we actually understand a role of specificity? Because if we are just trying to apply things without really having people having a foundation of a wide base, you know, being able to tolerate a lot of things going on in life, you know, it's called the wing of tolerance. I can't remember the name of the person, but Emily Hightower talks about this a fair bit. You know, your tolerance to your ability to have stress. If we have someone who is not sleeping well, who's anxious, who's overwhelmed, it's only like this anyway. So for me, it's like, well, first of all, are they in that position? If they're not, if they're already out of it, then applying anything is going to be too much for them. It's going to be a distress. So getting them into there, making them feel safe, making them aware of their own sensations in their body, then widening it by gradually building stress in there. So there is a, I guess, an approach to different people. And I think that's what we really need to apply. It's almost like if you don't have the energy and capacity to do more, then maybe we actually need to remove things out. Maybe we actually need to have more stillness, more downregulation, more calm. The issue is that someone might not feel safe with that because they've always been on the go.
Yeah.
So then it's working with that person to find the way through gradual exposure or change in maybe the external environment versus the internal environment first to help the person to be able to have some base. And sometimes that might take a week or two to figure out, or maybe even three, to figure out what works for that person to get them going.
Yeah, I'm glad that you mentioned that in the context of that for somebody who's always going and upregulated, that downregulation does not feel safe. Like it doesn't feel familiar or safe. And can you talk with us a little bit about how you're using the work that you're doing around breathing to explore the inner landscape more, right? To explore the mindset, to explore that the things we're trying to avoid feeling, to build the mind-body connection based on tracking emotions through our body or tracking how potentially like how in your own story, when you're talking about the problems with your hips, like did that correlate to something for you in your emotional body or in your story that you're like, oh wow, actually when I finally got through this thing, then the hip problem subsided. Like, is there, what correlations are you seeing between these physical practices that we're doing and exploring the psyche, the inner scope, the mindset and their stories in our lives?
Yeah, I guess definitely start with a personal one. I mentioned earlier on in part of my story where I'd gone so far into losing my way with my health that I developed psoriasis. And I was covered neck to toe, like thick plaques of it. Never had it before. And that was like the warning sign for me to say, no, you've gone off, your health's gone into a bit of a problem here. And I was really ashamed of it. I was embarrassed because I was someone who's always in the gym, like to look good, like to look lean, you know, getting down to the beach and happy top off. I couldn't do that. Okay. Now I started to look into a little bit into scientifically what psoriasis was. Now down at a cellular level. And essentially what it is it's your skin cells growing too fast for how fast they can shed. So you start to grow plaques on top. Now, when I was sat in meditation the night after reading that, and I was finishing my yin yoga and I sat there, something came up and it said, you're trying to grow a new you and you're not letting the old you let go. You've become disconnected from who you are. And I was like, holy crap. I was like, that is for me a physical symptom of showing an exact metaphorically of what's going on in my life at that current time. And I was like, wow. So then what I then did was I explored my values. I was like, I need to revisit my values of who I am as a person and who I want to be as a person. And to get that showed for me that mind and body are not separate. They're intricately interlinked. And mind can cause a physical manifestation and emotions can cause a physical manifestation and vice versa. It just so happens the breath is at the center of all of it. So once I have a client in a position where they're feeling more safe because they've started to implement their breath practices, you know, they've downregulated their nervous system. So they're actually now in a position where they are more explorative. They're connected to sensations in their body. Well, now maybe we can bring some events or sensations to mind and just observe what those sensations are and maybe label them. Is that sensation emotion? If it is an emotion, then can we journal on why I might be feeling that way? To give an example, I was working with a bodybuilder once and he came to me with panic attacks. And he had this real deep sighing every minute. You know, it's a typical deep sighing. It's a breathing dysfunction. So he wanted breathing support. And when I asked him on week two to start practicing yoga nidra, he came back to me the following week. And he said, I said, how did it go? He's like, oh, I did it, but I just didn't feel like it was for me. You know, I'm not sure if I want to do that sort of stuff. I just really haven't got time. So I saw potentially avoidance. So there was a choice. I either say, okay, we'll try something else, or I can ask him, I want you to try it again this week. But when you do it, I want you to notice how you feel. And when you do feel, if you do feel a particular way, where does your mind go? You come back the following day, week. And I said to him, how did you go? And he said, you know what? I went to do it and I had an overwhelming feeling of sadness. Huh. Okay. Where did your mind go? Well, it went to work. Oh, we've just found your coping mechanism for sadness, potentially. In my head, that's what I'm thinking anyway. I hadn't said that right then. What did you do when you went to do work? Well, I went to do some work and I felt overwhelmed. I just couldn't focus. Okay. So then what happened? I ended up scrolling on my phone or, you know, going to do X, Y, Z. Ha, dopamine finds the way. Dopamine will always find the pathway to create pleasure out of pain. That's just an essence of what dopamine will do or the coping mechanism will do. Are you logically overwhelmed with the amount of work you currently have? Like, if you look at it, the amount that you actually have, is it any different from any other day? And he was like, it's not. No. It's like, well, maybe not overwhelmed with work. What about you're overwhelmed with sadness? What do you have in life to be sad about? His eyes rolled back. It felt like it was like 20 minutes of him thinking. He burst out in tears. And he's like, I lost my dad 2 years ago and I've never grieved him. And he was just burst out in tears, sighing a lot. I was getting to breathe through it. It's okay. I understand, holding space for him, you know, sighing. We talk more. We spend another 45 minutes talking about it, building a plan for him to go through a grieving process. The following week, he comes back. His sighing had gone. He was no longer having this habitual sighing. He was suppressing his emotion, his sadness and his grief, and his breathing was showing him that. It just so happens that I understood that at the core of the root in the brain, grief and panic are the same part of the brainstem. Often when people lose attachments to something, their identity or a loved one or partner or job, it results in panic. And because I understood the science of that and I understood what was happening in his behavior, I could identify where there was an avoidance behavior. I could identify, wait, maybe it was avoiding an emotion. I could ask him to discover that emotion and then unravel that emotion. We could have a conversation about it.
Yeah. It's so awesome to hear because it, again, very parallel to a lot of the work that we do with our students is helping them identify the stories and the pain points and the emotions that are stuck, that just based purely on the fact that either these are things they've never been willing to speak about, things they've never wanted to address, they've never had a person to address it with or to work through it with. And those stories live in our, you know, they live in our brain, taking up a lot of our space, but they also live in our physical body. And so those physical manifestations of the pain, the suffering, the challenge, the unresolved things within us, it's like those are two great examples that really demonstrate that the inextricably linked between the mind and the body. And so much of like, I really believe personally through things I've seen and also through the coaches that we've worked with and the people that we interact with, there is a lot that can be resolved within the mind space alone, right? When we're willing to go there, but because we're not necessarily directed there or because we're not empowered to go there or the traditional systems are not going to, you know, there's not a pill to work through your emotions, right? There's not a pill to like address the tough stories that happened to you when you were a kid that you've been carrying around your whole life. There's no like quick, easy fix for it. It requires you to go into the pain and the struggle or the difficulty or the challenge and do some digging and do some reflection. And, you know, if we don't feel safe to go there, we don't have the right tools to go there, then we're just going to continue to stay in that stressed out state for as long as we can handle it or sustain it. And I really see such a significant shift in the paradigm of how people are willing to address this through the work that you're doing, through similarly how the work that we're doing. And what I'm curious to know from you is, since we're both in the game, you're working with teaching and developing coaches and practitioners, as are we. And I'm curious, do you notice if there's a difference in receptivity of the clients to do this type of work? So your students' clients, like the general mainstream people, are you noticing that they're more receptive to doing work like this? Or do you still see like being met with resistance around doing the deep inner work?
I think there has to be an element of the person themselves being owning the responsibility to actually go down that avenue himself. So if you're a coach and you're not grounded and you're not able to hold space, and if someone else's emotions come up and that triggers you and you feel like you can't handle that, hey, maybe it's not time for you to go there yet.
Yeah.
So there is also understanding that point. Yeah. So then that becomes about doing your own work to be able to get yourself in a position where you can hold space and you can stay grounded and be able to communicate with someone when they're going through some, potentially some emotional, talking about emotional disturbance stuff. Also, when, like, I don't like to go down the avenues that we are psychologists at the same time, because obviously that's another aspect of it. But naturally, what tends to happen when you work with people, when you get them grounded and you get them feeling more safe, they start to feel as if they're making progress. You start to make them aware of their state. And when their state shifts, if they can start to identify that, they become more open and receptive in general. So for me, I don't necessarily, I'm the breath coach. I'm going to help you with your physiology. And look, there is, you can either just have that, or is it, you can buy into a package where it's going to be mindset, and we'll go into that a little bit later on, but I won't do it at the beginning unless the person's open, has that trust, because you have to build the rapport. And you've got to build that receptiveness of them actually opening up and being, I guess, self-curious enough to go through that. And it might take 3, 4 weeks, 5 weeks until they're at that point. Then they become receptive.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think there's something about, like, you know, the person has to be ready and willing to go there versus, which is an important point to understand too, as somebody working with clients, is that ultimately, like, being able to get into, you might have the awareness or the skill or the understanding that that's the thing that you, that your clients need support on, but are they really willing to go there with you? That's an important piece to discuss, because at the same time, like, we need the opportunity to recognize that people who want help and who are seeking help, it's a different than the person who wants to do, who actually doesn't.
Yeah.
And it's such it's a fine line. And it's like an understanding, like, that's part of developing your craft and your skill and being able to lead and teach from that place. Mm. And I think that is also a matter of reps and is also a matter of experience and is also a matter of being able to
communication skills as well. Like, I think it comes through the conversation that you're having. If you're asking questions and they're getting shut down.
Yeah.
Yeah, and all of a sudden you ask a question and someone's just like, oh yeah, like, you have to see, is the person actually, are they surface level? If they're giving you surface level answers, then it's either you try and dig a little bit deeper, and if you dig a little bit deeper and it still stays surface level, that person's not ready yet.
Yeah, yeah, very true.
They have a boundary that you have to be mindful of.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we say often it's like your client is really in the driver's seat. Like, you are responding to them and guiding them. And so it's an important, it's an important way to see it and to look at it, for sure. There's been so much value in this conversation already, and there's so much more that I'm sure that we could dive into and discuss. And just in the interest of, like, keeping it, like, tight and potent because of everything that you've shared so far, there's so much that our listeners can reflect on. Every student of the Enlifted Method is going to be thrilled to hear you articulate everything about the science and all of the work that you're doing. And I see so much synergy. That's why I 1,000% understand why Tommy connected us. I knew I could tell.
Thank you, Tommy.
Yeah. I was like, I knew that there was, like, a lot that was in alignment here. And ultimately now I'm just like, yeah, it's super awesome to see. So just in the sense of, you know, like, leaving them wanting more, what's the best way for people to get in touch with you or to see more about what you're doing with your breath science certification and how they could further develop this skill with you? Because I do see a lot of so much overlap. And for the people that are really wanting to go there, I think this is, you know, that love and trust the work that we're doing. Like, it's so paralleled here that I would love for them to be able to go work with you.
Yeah, sure. So obviously they can find me on social media or all over the internet, Performance Through Health. That's where you find me. My main, I guess, activity is through Instagram. I have a YouTube channel. Now, to actually sign up to my YouTube videos and get what it's called the School of Breath Science, where I'm taking people through snippets of these modules to give people value, I've been able to take away some things. It's just schoolofbreathscience.com. But if you want to actually find out about the breath science certification, we run both group sessions, and I do one-on-one mentoring for people that want to go a little bit deeper and have some real guidance with it, then it's just breathscience.com.au.
Okay, lovely. Perfect. I'll put all that information in the show notes. And yeah, Martin, thank you so much for sharing your knowledge and wisdom with us today. I learned a ton and I really enjoyed this conversation so much. And so I'm really excited to share more with our listeners so that they can take all of this and just put it all together in one. You know, it's like, I love sharing information. I say this all the time, the truth overlaps. And when you're learning something and you're developing something from a specific lens, and then you realize, oh my God, there's those other people over here doing this thing that there's so much synchronicity or there's so much like overlap here. And then there's like a sense of like, to me, that's the most exciting thing. Cause I'm like, yes, the truth overlaps. It's not a competitive thing. It's not a like, oh, they have more than I have. Like, it's literally like, no, we're all in this mission together. We all have different skills. Yeah. We all have different ways of dealing and handling it. So thank you so much for sharing with us and for helping us to continue to move this mission forward.
Thank you. It's been a very enjoyable conversation. Often when people have me on podcasts, it's dogmatic science because I have a scientist background, and I've really enjoyed feeling like a human again.
Yeah, good. I'm so glad.
To what I'm applying. So yeah. No, I appreciate the conversation being stimulating, and thank you for the invite for coming on.
Totally. Yeah. This has been so great on both sides. So I really appreciate it. And yeah, I would love to share a little more with you about some of the stuff we're doing in Lifted. So I'll follow up with you after and send you some little nuggets because I think you'd really dig it.
Amazing.
All right. Catch you guys on the next episode.
Hey coach, ready to get your clients out of their own way and over their shitty mindset? Start by learning the words and make mindset coaching practical. Master the Enlifted method and guide your clients to lasting results by changing their words. To enroll in the next class of Enlifted Level 1 certification, head on over to enlifted.me and click Get Certified. Let us know you're loving the show. Subscribe, leave a 5-star review, and be sure to share it with your friends. Abracadabra.